Hey there, this is Jonah with Gray Area. Welcome to our series Spotlight, where our mission is to build a bigger and more united house music community by sharing new and exciting artists, festivals, and event brands with you. In this interview, you'll hear from Martin Eakin, a UK legend who has burst onto the global scene in recent years. Be sure to like this video and subscribe for more interviews like this. Hey everyone, this is Jonah with Gray Area, and today I'm joined by the one and only Martin Eakin. Martin, thanks so much for being here.
Pleasure, man. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. We'll just jump right into it. One of the first things we like to ask for our fans who may not know you, tell us about where you're from, what it's like, and what the house scene is there.
So I'm from London, England, UK, and the house scene is pretty good, man. It's we got a nice, healthy scene here. Obviously, if it was normal times, there'd be a lot of parties, but we're looking forward to them coming back very soon.
Oh, yes. I just saw that big event in Liverpool, right? With Youssef.
Yes. Yeah, did the videos, man. Youssef did such a good job with that, so...
How old were you when you first started DJing? Do you remember the first time that you played in front of other people?
So I had my first release in 91. So I think I was 17. I was probably DJing just a little bit before that. So kind of the same age, 17. And in that time, it was like the rave scene. That was when it was, first starting. And it was really big, all the warehouse parties. And a few of my friends were putting on big parties at that time. So I used to play at them. So it was straight from the bedroom onto the raves, onto the big stages of the raves. It was pretty mental, to say the least. Nice. Yeah.
Were there any people that inspired you to kind of take this up, whether it was artists or like the friends that were throwing parties?
I was pretty inspired by the obvious ones back then, which were like the Derek May and the Kevin Saundersons. You know, that was the music I was listening to, and they were the records I was buying. And so I just wanted to do that. You know, I wanted to do house music. And I would say they were my inspiration from that time. Yeah.
Awesome. If you had to choose one, playing at a festival, a large venue, or an intimate club, what would you pick?
Oh, it's a tough one because they've all got their pros. I think festival, though, because it's normally daytime and everyone's saying it's sunny and everyone's having a good time and there's a big, massive crowd. So I'm going to go festival, definitely.
Awesome. Do you have a particularly memorable experience on the dance floor, whether performing or as a fan?
On the dance floor as a fan, I can't remember. that would have been a long time ago. Normally I'm stuck in the DJ booth. So I'll have to come back to you on that one. Yeah.
No problem. One of the things we like to ask is, you know, I think in this world, it's assumed that, you know, the artists like only listen to house, techno, whatever it is. Are there any artists or genres that are kind of outside the world of electronic music that you listen to?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, anyone that knows anything about me will probably know that I love jazz. I play jazz piano. I study jazz piano. And that's actually what I listen to at the flat. I've got an old 1968 record player and I play all my old jazz records on that. So if you came round to my house, you'd be like, are you sure this is Martin Eakin's house? So jazz. Oscar Peterson is my favorite. He's very famous. Jazz pianist from the 50s, 60s. Herbie Hancock from back then in the 60s as well, when he was doing jazz on Blue Note, all the Blue Note stuff. So yeah, I'm a bit of an old jazzer as well.
How did you get into that? Was it being played around the house when you were a kid, or what was that discovery like?
It wasn't actually. It's just from my love of piano. So when I taught myself how to play when I was like early teens, and then after that I went on a jazz course and then studied jazz piano and just got into it from that. But I think it was just the ultimate way to play piano, and that's where it ended up for me.
Awesome. Next thing, if you had the opportunity to curate or book out, you know, the perfect club night that you were playing at, who would be on the roster, the lineup with you, and would you be playing back to back with anyone?
Oh, that's a tough question. I'd have to put all my mates on there, obviously, because otherwise they'd be like, "Oi, why aren't I on there?" So definitely Fish would be on there, Chris Lake, Noizu, Biscuit, all my pals. I'm sure there's some I've missed off there. Maybe some old guys as well. Derek May, someone like that. And it'd have to be a back-to-back with Fish because he's just mental and it'd be good fun. So, yeah.
He his energy on stage is just kind of out of this world. It's refreshing, I think, in that world of tech house where people can be like pretty muted and he's just like, "I'm having a party."
Definitely. That's what's good about him. He brings such a good vibe to the party and the DJ booth as well. So
absolutely. You know, one of the things I think we've seen a rise of in kind of the last year or couple of years is the increase in popularity in these like branded parties, whether it's, you know, Circo Loco, Jamie Jones Paradise, Elro. Are there any of those that, you know, you would really love to be a part of or that you think are just doing a great job?
Well, all of those ones you mentioned are definitely doing a great job. Would love to be on a Elro. That's always been a little dream of mine to be on one. I mean, I'd like to be on all of them, but yeah, Elro is the one that sticks out definitely because it's just, I think it's kind of unique with all its production and that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've been to them and they're an amazing vibe as well.
Awesome. One of the last thing I want to ask before we kind of get into your more recent career is, you know, as you mentioned, you know, you've been doing this for a long time. And I think for people who have discovered you recently, they might not know that. I know you used to literally make mixtapes on tapes and you posted this on your Instagram a couple of years back of somebody like finding a tape that you had made in like 1992. Can you just tell us about kind of, you know, what it was like growing up in that scene where, you know, you're literally recording on tapes, you're passing them out, what kind of equipment were you using? And, you know, as you mentioned, the warehouse scene in the UK, just kind of how those things were all wrapped into each other.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot different then because it wasn't a thing to be a DJ, you know, where it is now, you know, everyone recognizes that a DJ is a sort of career choice. Back then, it was not a career choice, you know. I was still having to do my apprenticeship whilst trying to be a DJ. And it was harder to, you know, to buy equipment as well. There wasn't loads of choice. So I had one Technics turntable and then I had one Sony belt drive turntable that was my dad's that he moaned about because I broke it. And then I had a mixer from, we all used to use like Realistic was the brand and that was from a shop called Maplin or Tandy. Did you have those over there?
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's a pretty old school shop. I think they've gone now. We used to have them here. They've definitely gone from here. And then, yeah, just used to record it onto tape, my dad's old tape, Sony tape deck, and then pass it out. That was pretty much the height of advanced technology back then. There was no CDs or anything. That was way before CDs came out.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, it was good times.
I think even just you mentioning CDs, you know, for people that don't know, it's so easy for newer fans to just assume that, you know, you carry your flash drive around, but it's like, they're actually called CDJs for a reason. And like, exactly, you know, yeah, you were burning these.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting into your career, I think people may not know, but you used to be a drum and bass guy. And, you know, some of your first releases kind of had, whether it was like the Rage EP or the I Know EP, you know, a little more of that bass house sound, a little more breakbeat, drum and bass influence. Kind of who was pushing you at that time to create and, you know, were there influences? And just tell us about your early sound.
I think I've always been influenced by the early stuff that I started out doing. in like I said, 91 is when I started. So that was the rave era. And then that moved forward a few years later into drum and bass. And then even a few years after that, I kind of meandered into doing garage and stuff. So just to go back to the music that I make now, and even the era that you were talking about with the Rage EP, that it's always been influenced by the stuff that I started out making back in the early 90s. I've always got a little bit of that in there somewhere.
So, you know, as your career progressed, it felt like over time, and I'm sure you can allude to this, like, you progressed more into that tech house world and kind of switching your sound to that four on the floor beat. You know, when I was listening through your music, it felt like the Pulse Wave EP in 2018 was maybe a bit of a turning point. Followed this with a Tool Room release. And, you know, obviously we know what Tool Room's about. They're like some of the kings of tech house. I think, you know, you were a rising name in the tech house world. And then 2019 comes, right? And if people didn't know you before, I think they had to know you now. You know, you came out first, I believe, with that No No EP on like Lee Foss's label, which was really creative. And then, you know, Hooked came out. And I'm just, you know, I'd love for you to kind of walk us through that process. You know, when you're in the studio making a song like Hooked, do you know it's massive right away? You know, kind of what is your mindset when you're making it, and who did you first send it out to, if it was Fisher or someone else?
I mean, when I'm making tracks, I always try and make something that I would want to play. That's like the remit of what I do. If I'm working on an idea and I think, would I play this? If the answer is no, then I don't go any further with it, you know? So when I finish something, I always think it would be something that I'd like to play, because that's, as I said, that's the remit of what I do. So for me, I always think my tracks are good when they're done. I know that might sound a bit big-headed, but those tracks, the No-No and the Hooked, weren't really for me any different to anything else I'd been making. I just thought they were good tracks. The weird thing is, I think sometimes it takes a while for people to sort of latch on to what you're doing. I'd sent that out to a good few people, both of those tracks actually, and no one was interested. And it was kind of making me doubt myself. And I was thinking, are these tracks any good then? I thought they were good. You know, it goes down well when I play them, but it wasn't getting any traction when I was sending them out. And then thank God for number one, Lee Foss, and number two, Fisher, because they both took those tracks. And I think that's what elevated me to the next level. You know, that's why people have heard of me now, because those guys gave me their platform. And that's the difference, really. You can be making good music, but if it doesn't get in the right hands, it's tough to move to that next level.
Yeah, absolutely. So just kind of, you know, following up on that, as we've talked about, it's like you've been around for a while, and I think, you know, you were carving your lane in the UK, and I'm sure in other places in Europe. You know, after those tracks, like we talked about before the interview, you know, you're playing in New York. I'm sure you're getting other shows in the US. You know, when you get a sign off like that from, you know, such big headline acts, does it feel personally validating? And, you know, from a career perspective, did that open doors for you in ways that just didn't exist before?
It's absolutely that. Number one, it does feel personally validating, but especially when you've been sending your music out to a lot of people and they're either not responding or they say that it's not for them. You know, you get a negative feedback. So yeah, it's definitely validating. And then it really does open the door for you to move forward with your career, because I think sometimes without that sort of endorsement from people who are much bigger than you in the scene, it's hard to move on and to get those, you know, to start getting the bigger gigs and that, you know.
Did you ever have moments, you know, in your career where you felt like, I'm not sure, you know, if this is going to happen or I want to keep going? Or for you, is it just you enjoyed the act of DJing and producing so much that it didn't matter?
Oh, there's been loads of moments like that. I mean, there's never really been any moments where I thought, I'm going to stop doing it because I've been doing it my whole life, pretty much my whole adult life anyway. So I wouldn't stop doing it, but there's definitely been lots of moments where I thought this is just not going to happen. But I'm going to carry on anyway. And thankfully I did. And it did. So, I mean, there's a moral to that story. Kids, if you get those moments, carry on, because you never know what's around the corner.
Absolutely. No, I mean, I think your story is so great for that. And it can be tough, you know, when you see like a guy like John Summit, you know, who people were aware of, but what, you know, was not where he is now. And then, you know, you put out a couple tracks and it's just like the flip of a switch. And that can happen for anyone at any time, whether it's age 18, age 35, like, you know, once that happened, obviously things started taking off. And then I don't know, you know, what exactly your touring plans were, but of course, as with everyone else, you know, the world shut down. We're still coming back from it. That being said, you know, I think you've managed to put out like a lot of really high quality music in the last 2 years or year and a half or whatever it's been. For you, you know, when you break through with a song like Hooked or the No No EP, I think, you know, people can often try and think, oh, this is what Martin's sound is now. This is what I'm expecting. And if it's not that, I'm confused. But for you, you know, you've managed to stay fresh and do different things, whether it's like Get Hype, Good Feelings, Back in Time. They all have distinct sounds. Would you say, you know, after you had that breakthrough, what has been important for you in terms of staying fresh and kind of finding new inspiration when you're in the studio?
I mean, I wouldn't say that the breakthrough has anything to do with the music that I'm making. I would have made those tracks anyway, because I always just make stuff, as I said earlier, that I would want to play out. And I try not to ever make the same record twice. Hopefully my records sound like that. And I love synthesizers. I don't know if you can see some behind me and some up there. So that's one of my favorite things is making noises and sounds. So I'm always trying to find something new to put in the next track, you know, and that hopefully makes it sound different from the one that I did before. So that's sort of how I work, really. Whether I was noticed or not, I think I still would have done that, you know.
Do you have a process when you're sitting down in the studio, which, as you mentioned, you know, I'm sure nowadays it's a lot more often than it was when you're playing a lot of shows, but do you have an idea in your head of, I want to create this, or do you just sit down and it's a clean slate and you just start building the track?
Different ways, really. Sometimes it might be a vocal sample that's the start, that's the Kickstarter. You know, have a little clip and then build around that. Sometimes, or a lot of the time, it'll be making a sound on one of the synths, like No, that was the Jupiter. I made that sound first, and then I actually had that vocal sat on my hard drive for about 5 years. I knew I wanted to use it. And then when I made the sound on the Jupiter, I knew that they would fit together, or thought they would fit together. So normally it's just an element like that, whether it's the vocal or a synth sound, and sometimes a bass sound as well. If I make a bass sound on the Pro One or the Moog, that can just be the spark, the inspiration to just then make the rest of the track around that, you know?
So just a follow up there, you know, as you alluded to, you obviously have a lot of equipment behind you. And I think for the uninitiated, it just looks like, why does Martin have three keyboards in the back? Could you just quickly tell us kind of, you know, what the difference is between the three and maybe like when you decide to go to one versus the other?
Yeah, that's what my mum used to say when she, if she ever comes in here, like, why have you got all these keyboards? Don't they all do the same thing? No, mum, they don't. There's not three, there's about 13. I don't know how many you can see. Maybe you can see.
Oh my
three.
God.
But they all do different stuff. So the Moog, this one here, this is my baby. This is like 1972, I think, this Mini Moog. That's predominantly bass. I use that a lot for bass and some really hard analog sounds. And up here you got 303. We all know what that does. That's like acid sounds. Jupiter, Juno, up here. I don't know if you can see up there is a Korg.
Oh yeah.
And they all just do different. They all just do different stuff. It's hard to explain, but different vibes on different synths. So you need as many as you can get your hands on. That's my advice.
Definitely. I mean, look, that's why I think, you know, you've managed to stay fresh. Like, that studio is no joke. One of the things, you know, as we're getting back to playing live shows, you know, I know you're going to be coming to New York, playing Electric Zoo. I don't know what else you have lined up, but hopefully plenty of things kind of for the future for yourself. Do you have any visions around what you'd like, you know, your live show to look like as, you know, you become more and more of a solo headliner, whether it's, I want a lot of lasers or more of an LED design or visuals, you know, what is that? What's the dream for you there?
Well, you hit the nail on the head there, lasers. I mean, that's going back to the old rave days in the 90s with the big green laser going across and everyone's hands in it. Yeah. Lasers, 100%. Give me some lasers. And yeah, some nice visuals behind me. I think I need to get some of that on board. That'd be nice. Yeah.
Definitely. You know, one of the things we talked about in the beginning was some of these branded parties, events, and kind of the impact that they're having. You know, for you down the line, do you see yourself trying to kind of work in a bit of a curator type role, whether it's having your own label or, you know, being part of one of these brands that's putting on parties?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, having my own label right now is not something I can do because I'm contracted to do something else. So that would have to be in the future. I have had my own labels in the past and would definitely like to do it again. So that's definitely something for down the road. And, you know, I'd always be happy to be part of a family that was doing something that I believed in, you know, like these parties are.
Definitely. So, yeah. One of the things that, you know, we're trying to do with this project is obviously introduce, you know, our North American audience to artists like yourself. Additionally, kind of give an understanding into the scene in Europe. And I think that from an American perspective, it's really easy to kind of say like, oh yeah, we know, you know, Ibiza and like Berlin's a thing, right? And like, yeah, like people in the UK party. For you, are there any places in Europe that you think fly under the radar or, you know, that just have a unique sound that you'd like to call attention to?
I mean, because I'm from here, I think London's got its own vibe and its own sound. That's not to say that it's better than anywhere else. It's just, I think from doing all the traveling that I've done and being in the States and Australia and actually those two places are amazing to party, States and Australia. But London's definitely got its own vibe. So if you haven't, come and check it out when you're allowed to. Stay safe.
Is there anywhere in the UK or in Europe that you really want to play that you haven't had the chance to?
Oh, that's a good question. Barcelona would be nice. I've never actually been there or played there. So yeah, that'd be one on the list.
In the US, is there a city, venue, festival that is on your list?
In the US, Coachella would be nice. Yeah. Coachella and Burning Man, please. Sign me up. Yeah.
Me too. It's tough, man. I work as a talent buyer with Made Event in New York. And so Electric Zoo is our festival. And I'm like, oh, I don't think I'm ever going to be able to go to Burning Man. It's the same weekend. We're just.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's why we are, you know, right. It's like Carl Cox always plays Burning Man.
Gotcha. Right. Well, I'm coming to Electric Zoo anyway. So sorry, Burning Man. I'm in New York. You can't have me.
Oh man, yeah. We're looking forward to it. Something else I like to touch on, you know, especially for someone of your stature, if there are any artists, you know, kind of smaller, up and coming that you're listening to or you think are just making great music that you'd like to shout out.
Yeah, there's two guys actually that send me their stuff that I, if I was playing out, I'd be playing their stuff at every party. It's Roxy, R-O-X-E, I think that's how you pronounce it, and Tyler Coey as well. Two guys that are putting out solid stuff all the time. So I keep an eye out for those guys.
Awesome. What's like, what's the release schedule like for you? Are you looking to put out a lot of music? Are you trying to be more selective, you know, as we're kind of reopening into the live shows again?
I mean, obviously when the shows start, the output will drop off a little bit because I won't be able to be in here as much. So I'm trying to get as much done before we get back to normal life. So yeah, there's quite a lot in the pipeline to come. And hopefully I'll be able to sort of get enough done so that when I'm touring, there's still kind of regular releases, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. The last thing I want to touch on, when I was looking through your Instagram, I got the sense that you're a Liverpool fan.
Yes, I was actually born there, believe it or not. You'd never tell by my accent, but yeah, my family.
I was curious, yeah. Any thoughts, you know, it's kind of a tough season this year, you know, thoughts on how they're going to bounce back in the Super League?
Well, the Super League's definitely not happening. So that's a no-no. And as far as this season, I just can't wait for it to end because we've been terrible. Come on, Liverpool, sort yourselves out. So I'm hoping next year we get Virgil van Dijk back and we'll spend a bit of money. Come on, FSG, get your fucking hands in your pockets. And we can start the fight again next year because this year has been terrible. Yeah.
Oh man, it's tough. I mean, when you lose a guy like Van Dijk the whole season, that's a bad start. And it felt like the team was a little just like beat up the whole year. And you see it now at the Champions League final. It's like those squads just have so much depth.
But exactly. Yeah, we don't have that depth, so we couldn't compete really on that level. So fingers crossed for next season.
Awesome, man. Well, that's all I got on my end. I just want to say thank you again for coming on. We really appreciate it. Really looking forward to having you in New York. We'll have to link up at the Electric Zoo, and hopefully it's the first of many.
Yes, definitely. Can't wait. Let's hang out when I'm over there as well.
Awesome. Have a good one, man.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. Cheers.